And think about when you have to show up not as your whole self every day, how much of your soul you're losing, you know? That's why the diversity work, the inclusion work is so important, because sometimes it's hard to explain that every day over and over and over. And if you're a leader of an organization, you have to really be mindful to look at the world through other people's lenses.
You are listening to Ambition Out Loud, the podcast for ambitious women tired of being underestimated and undervalued at work. Together, we're tackling workplace sexism, our own insecurities and self-doubt, and getting practical advice to move our careers forward. I'm your host, Nicole Magoo, and I'm an ambitious woman.
You should have seen that final show. I'm gonna go down swinging, and long after I am gone, when you hear that melody, you'll still remember me. That's how this girl is gonna carry on.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to say thank you and welcome to Dr. Tracy Baxley for joining us today. Dr. Baxley is a consultant, a coach, and educator dedicated to supporting families, organizations, and corporations in developing inclusive practices that lead to meaningful relationships, a sense of belonging, and high productivity. As a belonging and inclusion advocate, she started Tracy Baxley Consulting, a diversity and inclusion consultancy to support organizations, teams, and leaders in developing inclusive practices in the workplace. She's also the creator of and coach for Social Justice Parenting, a parenting philosophy that moves families from fear-based parenting to parenting from a place of radical love through compassion and social engagement. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tracy.
Thank you, Nicole. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. I know one of the things that many people listening to this podcast are curious about is just diversity and inclusion training. They've heard it. It's a buzzword. They don't exactly always know what it is or how it helps or what to expect from it. Could you kind of start by just giving us a crash course in diversity and inclusion training 101?
Yeah. Let me start off by just giving a quick overview of the difference between diversity and training. I've seen them used interchangeably before, but they're not the same thing. So just quickly, diversity is kind of what you have or what you see. It's a representation of the people, the thoughts, the ideas that are part of your company. And inclusion is what you do with those, right? So it's the practices, it's the way that the diverse voices are being used in your company. Do they feel valued? Do they feel visible? Do they feel like they belong? So the diversity is the people and the thoughts, and the inclusion are really your practices and your policies that make them feel like they belong. So sometimes diversity and inclusion, those trainings may be different, right? You may be working with a leadership or a team that are trying to increase the representation of groups in their companies or in their firms or whatever. So sometimes people have training on how do we recruit, how do we retain a diverse workforce. And then some people may have trainings on the inclusion part. Like, we have this great workforce that brings all these different ideas and different lived experiences, but in our practices and our policies, we're having issues with maybe somebody feeling like their voices may not matter, or that they are having a hard time fitting in, or there's something that we're doing in our company that makes them feel invisible or like their voices don't matter. So diversity and inclusion can come in a lot of different ways. What a person who's doing the training should look at is what's going on in that company or in that organization already. So you want to ask a lot of questions. You want to get a lot of background on the makeup of the company already in order to know where that company or where that organization needs to go from, you know, where they are at that moment. But it's all about creating places of belonging for everybody so that people can come to work their whole selves and not feel like part of who they are is not welcome into the workspace.
Yeah. So it sounds like the key is figuring out where is your company starting from, because not everyone's starting point is the same.
Right. And that really is the key, right? Some reflection. It all starts from you kind of uncovering your own biases or your own weak areas in order to know how to build from there. And sometimes people don't know what they don't know, right? And so part of my job, if I come into a company or organization, is to help you kind of unfold what you already have and what's working and how to build from that or how to make the changes so that your practices are aligned with what you want your organization to be.
So it sounds like maybe a little bit of a pre-audit is in place. When you're looking for things like diversity and representation, are you looking at numbers at the whole? Are you looking at numbers at different levels within the organization? What does that look like?
Yeah. And again, that depends as well. What I found in a lot of the bigger organization, there is a problem with diversity beyond mid-management. For example, I did a workshop last year with American Express, one of their South Florida headquarters, and they were doing a lot of wonderful things. But the kind of blind spot they had was really they were very diverse in most areas across the board, except when it came to beyond mid-management. So all of the upper level management, everybody looked the same. And so where they thought they were doing great, there were some spots that they really should have been working on, or we're now able to see, okay, this is where we need to do a little bit more work. So yes, it often is moving beyond mid-management, but sometimes people are just having practical issues in their organizations where people just don't feel comfortable. And I do a lot of workshops on implicit bias and what that is and what that looks like in a company. And then, you know, lately, since our country has kind of been in this awakening, racial awakening, people are asking me to come just to do some basic definitions and to just kind of give an overview of what diversity and inclusion is and what they should be looking for in their companies.
Yeah, this is so key right now. It reminds me of something I heard. I listen to this podcast called Brown Ambition sometimes, and it reminds me of a story that one of the hosts, Tiffany, was sharing, where early in her career, she had been interning at a company and had gotten a couple offers. And one of the more senior women on staff pulled her aside one day because she had just gotten an offer from that company too. And it was a lot of money for early in her career. And the woman kind of said to her, "Hey, hun, have you noticed at the different levels within this organization, which jobs are available to the brown and black skinned employees among us and which ones are available higher up in the ladder?" And she hadn't really stopped to think about it herself, she said. And then the woman was like, "You would be a damn fool to accept that offer right now. You can do better." And that was just like an aha moment for me of like, yeah, not only do these things really matter, but we need to be looking out for each other in those situations and really helping each other spot some of those things in the workplace as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And also the idea of diversity, right? It's about women. It's about, you know, racial differences. We're talking about ability. So there's a lot of different ways that we can look at diversity as well. So to me, that rings true for us as women, you know, looking out for each other in the works, especially in a corporate space. Often in corporate America, you know, it's white men primarily who are in these higher leadership roles. And yes, and I agree. And sometimes we don't know what we don't know, right? So it sounds like to me, she was thinking she was getting a great promotion or something wonderful. But when you don't look at it holistically, because you don't know, that's why it's really important, like you're saying, to collaborate and to support one another as we are navigating the workspace.
Yeah, completely. Especially for those of us on the younger end of the spectrum that are encountering these things for the first time in many cases. We just don't know what we're getting ourselves into so often.
And mentorship is very important too. You know, most companies, a lot of companies should have some kind of mentorship for young employees, especially young, diverse employees, because it is a new space and it's a new way of navigating. And the studies show that mentorship in organizations really helps mitigate a lot of the negative experiences that young professionals have when it comes to diversity and inclusion issues.
A lot of times, just on that line of mentorship, what I see a lot and I hear a lot is the younger women in the workforce looking desperately to find a mentor. And while they are wise to be looking for one, I think in many cases that responsibility falls on those of us that are more seasoned and more experienced of putting ourselves out there to be available for mentoring. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. But, and I also think it's part of the company's responsibility as well. I think that's part of inclusion. You're making sure that the culture or the community in which you are trying to create at in your work is open and supportive of all the people that are there. So I think, yes, it's a responsibility for people who have been there for a while. And I also think it's a company responsibility to make sure that people feel like they're seen and heard.
So for those of our listeners that are kind of hearing what you're saying, it sounds like the first question is, where does my company fall on this landscape? Is it more on the diversity training side, or are we making progress in that area and we need to start thinking more about the inclusion, or should these things be going together in tandem? Like, how does somebody or a company that's new to this space, what is the best practice for them to get started?
Yeah, I think they certainly can work in tandem, but I think also, you know, the ins and outs of your organization to know which one you're feeling like you need the most support in. As you mentioned earlier, I think just kind of an internal audit is important for you to be real and be honest with yourselves about what you're doing, what you're actively intentionally doing versus something that's just kind of happening. And I think the more you, and I also want to say that diversity and inclusion is not a checkbox. Like, you can't like say, I did it. It's ongoing. It's very fluid. It changes often. It's something you have to stay on top of. It's something that you have to be conscious of in order to make sure that you're making the adjustments in your company so that everybody feels heard and valued. So there is no one-off. I know even in my, I do a lot of, I call them eat and engage. They're like interactive lunch and learn sessions. And a lot of people are choosing those, especially now, and they are a one-time investment. But what I do, because I don't want it to be just one time, I come back in a week or so and any holes that employees may still have. And then I create like a video so that I'm answering their questions and then trying to make them think a little bit more and dive a little bit deeper, even though they won't have me anymore. So don't think it's a one and done. It's something that is constant and that we have to always be mindful of as your employees change, as your business change, as society changes. It's something that you have to keep nurturing.
Yeah, that's so true. To that point, where do you think this kind of, what we're talking about here should theoretically be driven from the top down? Leaders within the organization at the C-suite that want to see lasting change. You know, ideally that would be where this was all starting. A lot of times you see something like this living in an HR department. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you see the demand for this starting at the bottom and the frontline employees. Where do you sort of think people should move, depending on, first off, what are your thoughts about it living in HR? How well does that work out? How do some of your clients that have been more successful structured things within their organizations?
You know, it's all of the above, right? I know when I work with bigger organizations, it's the HR that is the department that's getting in touch with me and giving me like the numbers in order to create the workshop or the training to fit that particular company. But sometimes it's like the office manager, if it's a smaller company, and they know the hub and bub of everything that's going on. And so I get real numbers and the real agendas of everybody from the office managers, because they are in contact with more people and they know what's really going on in the day-to-day workings of the company. So it really depends. I think ideally you want the managers or the boss or the CEOs to be mindful of that, because you get more buy-in from your employees when the top level leadership says that this is important. Oftentimes, though, the higher CEOs and the higher leadership, they're not aware of what's going on in the day-to-day. And so oftentimes it may come from mid-management, because they're kind of the middleman to everybody who's working day-to-day, and the CEOs who sometimes may not be in touch with everything that's going on. But it depends on the company. But I think what's the most important is that there is a group of some people, there's someone who is mindful of the culture of the company in order to keep a pulse on what's going on. But I have different stages of different companies and different levels in which come to me to say, I think we need help, or can you support us, or what do you think about this? But if you are in your company and there is nothing going on and you feel like that it's important for you or that it's needed, I would certainly talk to at least your immediate boss or your immediate management to share your feelings or air your feelings about that. There are also, I don't know, there's a lot of organizations that have affinity groups. Sometimes these things come from the affinity groups where they see that there is a need or a lack of support, and they can go as a group. You know, there's some, in some senses, safety in numbers, or the more that an organization sees that there's more than one person who needs this or feels like this could be helpful, that may be helpful to a group of people as well. So it really does vary. But I think if you are an individual at organization or in a corporation and you feel like there is a need, I would certainly speak out, especially right now, because I think more than ever, people are willing to listen and to be responsive to the lived experience of different groups of people and are willing to hear. So if you are in a situation where you're the CEO, you should be listening to your employees and your teams, because I think people are speaking out now more than ever, and we really can make a revolution when it comes to diversity and inclusion and belonging practices in companies right now.
Yeah, that's very true. I do think that the tide has turned a little bit so that people are more receptive to that message at the moment.
Yeah, and if we don't keep feeding it, you know, it'll die down. So I think we need to keep feeding it so that these ripple effects continue to grow and continue to linger.
Just in case anyone listening isn't aware, could you tell us quickly what an affinity group is?
Yes, affinity group is a subgroup of people in an organization. It's almost like a safe place at an organization. So affinity groups could be based on race. So you have like an African-American group in your company. It could be based on religion. It could be based on political parties. It could be based on disability. Whatever that group of people in your organization feel like they need to get together to discuss issues that are related to them, or in to support community outreach of people who look like them. But it's almost like a safe space for a group of people who identify as such within an organization. So it could be based on religion, different identities that we hold as human beings.
What if your company is on the smaller side and doesn't have sort of a huge budget for some of these official trainings? Where would you recommend they get started?
I would say if you don't have a budget, I would say really start within, right? You can start to at least have dialogue, at least allowing people to voice their opinions about it so that you get to see where their heads are, you know, what they're thinking they need, where they feel like they are, what they're missing. So I think the first step could be just having an idea of what your team feels like they need. And also, if you're doing like a one-time training to get things started, it's not that much. I mean, it's worth a small investment to be able to start the conversations. And I think it's about starting conversations. It's about genuinely starting conversations, especially if you're a leader, having open dialogue with your teams about wanting to do things differently or wanting things to change. Also, I know I'm at the university as well, and we have a Black, it's like an affinity group, but it's not official, where we meet, you know, not on campus, but we may have lunch together to just discuss some issues that we're feeling, just to have a sounding board to bounce off of. So even if it's not official, if you have a small community or colleagues at work that you have common interests or common issues, then that could be something really great for you to start on your own.
So for the frontline workers or the people near the bottom that don't have as much direct power and influence, a lot of companies this last year we saw come forward and give employees Juneteenth off for the first time. What if you were at a company that didn't do that and you're like, hey, I want my company to do that too? Or I've heard even of companies that are still, they're giving Columbus Day off, but they're still not giving having Martin Luther King Jr. Day off. Like, what would your recommendation be to try to get some of those proposals put forward? Like, how does somebody even get started about with something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, outside of your organization or your company, I think legislation in your state or in your, so that you are making sure the people you know or you are contacting your local officials. We know that numbers count. So the more people who are asking for that to be in a national holiday, the more leverage you get and the more traction. So I would say, you know, start off with elective officials to really kind of push that and say that that's important to you in your town or in your state. And then, you know, if you have a smaller company, I think I always think that numbers matter. If you have a group of people who are passionate about that, I think when you have numbers, it matters and you're heard more. The other thing that I think, and this is maybe controversial, you take that day off, because if that's important to you, that may be a sign that you're sending to your company that this is important to me, this is important to my culture, and this is a day that we're celebrating in my house or in my community. So I think sometimes you have to do things kind of rogue in a little ways in order in the beginning to make some kind of action later. But I will certainly try your elective officials, go in numbers to your organization. And then sometimes you have to make those sacrifices yourself, just like, you know, the people who came before us did. You know, Martin Luther King was not always a popular decision about a holiday, and people kept pushing. So if it's important to you, you don't give up on it. You keep pushing, you keep asking, you keep signing petitions, you keep bugging your legislation to make those changes.
Yeah, I think that's true. I've been watching and following Opal Lee's petition to get Juneteenth made a national mm-hmm. holiday, and she got so much traction. That petition had kind of floundered for years and years, and over the summer, it's gotten well over, the last time I checked, I think it was 1.3 million signatures. But it really feels amazing. Like that one has moved to the next step where we really need to start advocating with our senators and our elected congressmen for it to be, because it's gotten the public support at this point.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. We all have to flex our political power a little.
That's exactly right. And sometimes it takes tragedies for these things to really settle in, right? And I think now is the time.
Yeah, seize the moment.
Yes.
So if your company, if you've tried a couple of these things, you've tried speaking to your manager, you've tried, you know, bringing your, maybe you either don't have an affinity group or your affinity group has aired their concerns, but it doesn't seem like they're being taken seriously, or at least not this year they are. What do you recommend for individuals to do? Both individuals that are trying to develop and grow in this area so they can become better leaders, and for the individuals that are kind of caught in that environment and are not thriving because of it?
I would say invest in yourself, right? Maybe find one colleague who's willing to grow and learn with you, and then start small, educating yourself, making changes to for yourself, maybe sponsor like a book club or a small group that can help grow, and then slowly maybe add to that group. But I think at that point you start with yourself, and as you learn and you grow, then you get to make decisions about whether that particular company is the right place for you. But if you can't get traction that way, I say that you then need to invest in yourself, see if by growing your own ways of thinking and ways of being. So, and I was, you know, one friend, you have one colleague that you feel like you can have conversations with, that you can connect with and have some dialogue around what's going on in your company and how you can navigate that. All you need is one other person to feel like you have some support. Even if it's somebody at your level, it's a great place to start. But don't give up. Find one person, invest in yourself, continue to learn, continue to try to move the needle.
What is your vision? Where would you like to see things go from here? You work with all these companies and you work with a lot of parents too, and we'll get into that here in just a second. But what would you like to see happen over the next 2 years?
I would like to see most companies have some policy and practices around diversity and inclusion. like that. It's not happenstance. It's not something that is a checkbox for people, but that people are investing in the time and the people and the ideas that come from diverse groups. So I want everybody to be more mindful that it's important. I would like people to, when they're hiring, and I'm not saying hire somebody because they're diverse, but I would like diversity to be on the list of things that we're looking for when we're trying to hire. So I want it to be on the minds of those who are power in companies so that everybody can come to work and feel like they belong there and that they're valued and that their voices matter.
We know that the work of anti-racism requires commitment to a movement, not just the moment. The Nardi Media Black Lives Matter Book Club amplifies Black voices through both fiction and nonfiction storytelling, making it easier to stay engaged and intentional about your growth in the areas of anti-racism and social justice. Book Club members looking to take their commitment a step further can add the BLM Book Club Companion Box, created by Ambition Unboxed. The Companion Box helps you put your money where your mouth is by aligning your economic power with your social values. Each box includes that month's book club pick, plus a selection of seasonal products featuring Black-owned businesses. Learn more at ambitionunboxed.com or by clicking the link in the show notes. Are there sort of right ways and wrong ways to go about that hiring process and including and increasing diverse hiring?
I know one thing that people think, that people who do this diversity work, they think we're saying that you should hire somebody because they're Black. I'm just going to just kind of put it out there. And that's not at all what we're saying. What we're saying is you should be, just like you're looking for somebody who's great at certain skills, you should be also looking for somebody who has diverse lived experiences, because Deloitte did a study. Their studies show over and over and over that the more diverse your workforce is, the more innovative, the profit, the bottom line is, because you are having people who have different lived experiences. You know, I can tell you what I think would work with a Black group of clients more than you could, because that's my lived experience. So the idea is not hiring somebody because they're Black. It's hiring somebody because of their lived experiences, and because the more diverse you have in your company or in your leadership, the really, if you're looking at the bottom line, really, the more the bottom line will go up. Diversity is important to innovation, creativity. And so look at it even through that lens, and that could only benefit your company.
I think in many cases, I've seen, at least with women's hiring, and I suspect some of this is also true where we're talking about diversity in areas of racial and ethnic inclusion, a lot of that hiring issue starts with the way in which job descriptions are written and how those jobs Definitely. Are made available to the public. What are some of the biggest sort of concerns that you see, or some of the things the next time I have to hire a manager, that I could think about it differently if I knew these other things?
I think part of the problem, Nicole, is where we're looking for our next hire. I think the way we recruit is important, you know, just as important as, you know, the way we write up our description. But try to think outside of the box about how you, because I often hear, especially in like the in tech or STEM or the you know, in medical candidates. But I always say, well, where are you looking? Because if you are hiring from, there's some very bright, promising people from HBCUs there, even LinkedIn, the diversity that's in LinkedIn. So I would say really expand and think outside of the box of how you are going about looking for your candidates. Where are you putting your ads or your job descriptions? You know, that to me says a lot, your hiring practices or your recruiting practices.
Yeah. All right. Let's switch gears here a little bit, because I definitely want to make sure we touch on social justice parenting. As many of the people that are listening to this podcast are looking to advance within their corporations, a large subset of them are also parents and are wanting to make sure that, you know, they're doing a better job of exposing their kids to issues of racial inequity so that they can raise them up to be more open and inclusive as they mature. Could you tell us a little bit about social social justice parenting and how you work with families?
Yes, yes, definitely. Again, it's all about belonging and inclusion. That's kind of my life's work. But this is really, this part of my business is really my heart's work. It's really working with families who really want to do the work in raising children who are socially engaged, who are compassionate and kind. And it's looking at moving away from this idea of fear-based parenting. Like, we're all parenting from fear. There's so much going on in the world that we are afraid. We want to protect our children. We want to shield them from any harm. There's so much going on politically, socially, that we are almost frozen, or we are almost in like fight or flight mode when it comes to parenting. And the social justice parenting is really a philosophy that tries to move us beyond that and really start looking at how do we navigate this space of mostly motherhood, moms and a few good fathers, because it's mostly moms who are really doing this work with me on raising kids who are anti-racist, who are socially engaged, and who really are independent and can advocate for themselves and for others. And so we do a lot of work around what I call the rocks. It's kind of like the platform or the pillars to the idea of social justice parenting. And that's, the R is reflection, like really kind of looking at your own childhood, looking at your own ways of being and experiences and how you bring that into your parenting. All the good and the bad, and how we can intentionally make sure that we are parenting from the place that is our best selves. And then it's the O is open dialogue. This acronym is ROCKS. It's about having those hard conversations, having the courage to have those hard conversations with your kids. And that means being vulnerable, not knowing all the answers, but really working with your children on how they can learn more and do more and be okay with some of these hard topics that often cause us to be fearful. And the C is for compassion. So it's about raising children who see themselves, see others and their plight and their circumstances. And it's also about self-compassion. As moms, we sometimes are very hard on ourselves, and it's the way we show self-compassion is how we're modeling that for our children. And the K is kindness. So I see kindness as compassion and action. So what can we do to show kindness to ourselves, to our children, and in the long term, our communities, and more of a global lens. And then the S is social engagement. So this is demonstrating forms of activism in our homes, in our communities, so our children grow up to be change agents in the world. So that's kind of the premise behind that, the whole idea of social justice parenting. And I work with parents one-on-one coaching, and then we do some group coaching. And I'm now in the process of writing a book on it, which I'm very excited about. I just got a contract with Harper Wave publisher a few weeks ago. So I am busy writing right now.
Congratulations. That's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. Yes.
I'll have to try to bring you back for a Books and Bubbles event in the future when your book is...
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. Well, there's definitely a large audience, I'm sure, that's eager to grab that.
Yes, I'm getting really good feedback so far, mostly on Instagram, but a lot of moms are really appreciating the space. So I'm excited about that.
Absolutely. We will definitely share your Instagram, and I'm going to put all this stuff in the show notes for those listening that want to come learn more about Tracy. She is doing some really interesting and exciting work that all of us just as individuals can benefit and learn from as well, outside of the very important work she's doing helping companies transform and evolve. One fun thing, or sort of more popular interest topic, to wrap this up before we move on to the rest of our lives and trying to continue this work. Beyoncé's new visual album came out last week.
Yes.
Very popular right now, as you can imagine.
Right. Yes. We watched it immediately in my house.
Yes. So did we. Well, I did the pre-watch because it is a little bit, I think it's rated PG-13 or something along those lines. So I was watching to make sure it was okay to let the younger ones watch first. But yeah. The first thing I noticed is that this album is not for a white audience, which is totally, that is fine, but it's just clear from watching it that this is not intended for a white audience. It really emphasizes her role as a mother, Beyoncé's role as a mother. That's kind of a prevailing theme. And it's like she was writing it for her own son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so she really focuses sort of on this theme of finding your way back home to Africa. And one of the lines that's in there that is directly intended for the white viewers kind of goes by quickly. I had to pause and rewind a few times to make sure I was really grabbing it. But I do want to pull it up and just sort of talk about it for a minute. She says in there, "If I don't know me, then how can you ever know me? And I just sort of was wondering if you wouldn't mind reflecting on that line for us so we can really take out of that, just give it the attention that it deserves, because it does pass by a little quickly in the actual film.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's all in interpretation, right? But when I hear that, I go back to, I mean, this is, you know, me as a diversity advocate and a belonging advocate, I go back to this idea of slavery. You know, it all starts there for me, right? It's about never really knowing who you are, always thinking about there's a part of you, there's a part of your history, there's a part of your heritage that most of us will never know what that was like, right? And if I don't do the work to really get to know who I am outside of that, knowing my history, knowing as much as I can about who I am, I can't expect you to do that work for me. Listening to you say, you know, it really wasn't for white moms, you know, white audience. And I think it is for white audience, especially right now, because to me, she gave you a peek into what a Black woman's soul says, right? This is what we're grappling with every day as we are presenting our Black sons and daughters to the world, you know, protecting them, preparing them for what's out there without really knowing all of your history. And I think this is a time that a lot of white families and white moms in particular are now seeing the difference in the way we as Black moms are raising our children. And so I think this was one more kind of layer pulled back to say, this is who we are as Black moms. And there's a lot of things we have in common, but there are some things that are very special about being a Black mom in America. And I want you to see, and I want you to be a part of that. And I think her way of really trying to connect the heritage and the ancestry that we were stripped of and connecting that to where we are right now, I think is what that line really means. You know, I've got to do the work. I've got to learn who I am. I've got to teach my children as much as I can. And I can't expect the world outside of them to do that for them or to know who they are until I teach my children who they are and whose they are, you know. So that's kind of my interpretation of that. What were you thinking?
I think that's all really beautiful. It's complicated for me because my kids are directly of African descent. My husband is from Tanzania. So It will be at some point in their future as they get older, we will be taking trips back to visit family there. So part of me saw that and just felt so much pain for people that don't have that direct link.
Yeah.
And knowing my kids do have the benefit of that. And part of me also saw that and thought, you know, if we're trying to build these workplaces that are telling people to show up as your whole self and you don't feel like you are your whole self, that just feels like a losing game sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you.
And think about when you have to show up not as your whole self every day, how much of your soul you're losing, you know? That's why the diversity work, the inclusion work is so important, because sometimes it's hard to explain that every day over and over and over. And if you're a leader of an organization, you have to really be mindful to look at the world through other people's lenses. And sometimes that requires you to be very vulnerable. Sometimes that requires you to be a servant leader. That requires you to ask questions. And it requires you to respect their answers, because it may not make sense for you. It may not be the answer that you were looking for, or it may not be something that you understand. But as a leader, you really need to think about the lived experience and take their lived experience as truth for them. And how do you help them navigate that space at work so that they feel whole? And that's what I was saying too, that, you know, sometimes if you're in a space that's suffocating and you're doing the work on your own, educating yourself and trying to do the mindful practices or whatever that is to make you feel whole, you may have to think about, is this job eating me alive, right? If I can't be whole here, is this the place for me? And sometimes the environment is toxic enough that you feel like you're leaving a piece of you there every day, that you really have to do some soul searching, whether it's worth staying and fighting for. You make me want to cry too. So my advice to you, or my call to you, is to really allow them to plug into that, because you're right. It is such a privilege to be able to go and talk to their elders and know their history. That's such a beautiful thing. So make sure they are drowned in that love and support and that feeling of home when they go visit.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's such a privilege for them to have that opportunity. The other side of it, you probably don't know this about me, but I studied in Uganda for a semester in college, again was an opportunity, but man, I fell in love with that country and it's just so beautiful. And so I loved Beyoncé's movie because of that. Because
I'm sure it touched you. Yeah.
So reminiscent. And it was nice to see her really anchor it in Africa and help show some of that to her viewing audience.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And have you heard, oh God, what's her name? The author, I don't know if it's a TED Talk, maybe a TED Talk, The Single Story.
No.
What's her name? Oh my God. I can't believe I can't think of her name. She's an author of many books. She's an African woman. She has a TED Talk called The Single Story, and you should listen to that. She's basically talking about how we see a person as a single person. Like she was saying, when she came over from Africa, when she came to the States to go to school, all of her classmates had this one single story about what it was like to live in Africa. And they didn't see, like when you said how beautiful Uganda is, you know, people don't see that side. They see one single story. And the more that we can see people for the layers that they are, the more that we can embrace and understand how we really have more in common than not. It's just a beautiful story about not seeing people for one thing and to really broaden your idea of who a person can be in all their layers and all their colors and all their flavors in order to really get an idea of who people or a group of people are. I can't think of her name, but
we will find it and we will put it in the show notes.
Okay.
For everyone.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Yes.
Yeah. That's so key, right? We don't need to reduce everyone down to a single storyline.
Yes.
We're complex people.
That's right.
And the beauty is in the complexity. So.
Yeah. And the messiness, right? It's okay to be messy about it because that's how we learn and grow. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a really great conversation. Part of it was sort of, you know, let's get the message out there because this is the moment to get the message out there. But part of it was very, very touching. And I thank you for that journey. Yeah.
Thank you, Nicole. Thank you for being vulnerable too. I love that.
Where can our listeners learn more about you, both on the corporate side and regards to social justice parenting? Where can they find you?
Yes, corporate site, tracybaxley.com, Tracy with an I, and LinkedIn too. And then more of the social justice parenting. I'm social justice parenting everywhere. That's my website. That is my Instagram. And Instagram is really where we're kind of hopping there. There's a lot of followers with a lot of ideas and a lot of questions. And if you are interested in that at all, go right now while I'm writing the books, because I'm trying to incorporate everybody's questions and struggles in the book so that it's all captured there. So Instagram at Social Justice Parenting, and I'm also on Facebook, same name.
Wonderful. And like I said, that'll all be in the show notes so you can find Tracy easily. You're going to want to follow this woman, especially on Instagram. Thank you again, Tracy.
Thanks, Nicole.
That's our episode for today. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. If you found today's episode helpful, please pull out your phone and share the link with one or two friends that would also benefit from hearing it. If you really loved it, please leave a review in iTunes to help others find the podcast. Itching to meet other ambitious women? Connect with members of our community online at the Ambition Unboxed Facebook group. Ambition Out Loud is produced by Cultivate Inc. LLC. This episode was edited by our new editor, Kristen Sullivan. Welcome to the team, Kristen. Today's music is by Steve Rice Music. New episodes will be available every other week. Until next time, remember, your ambition is a beautiful thing.
I'm gonna go down swinging. There'll be a tale to tell. Like a boxer in the ring, I'll give my everything. Until I hear that final bell, well, I'm gonna go down swinging, whether I'm right or wrong. I know without a doubt, until the lights go out.